The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you invitation to the NCRS webinar coming up on October 15th, from the American Foundation for the Blind, a fall newsletter, from Two Blind Brothers, a Shop Blind Challenge, from CoolBlindTech.com, Cornell University develops combustible braille. From Healthline.com, eye injections benefit diabetics. Another from CoolBlindTech, PlayStation Store is launching an accessibility collection. From Interesting Engineering, the European Union proposes mandatory USB-C connectors for all devices. From CNBC, long COVID is defined. Let's get started. Got a lot on the table here. From the North Carolina Reading Service, happy autumn. Gratitude can transform common days into thanksgivings, turn routine jobs into joy, and change ordinary opportunities into blessings, by William Arthur Ward. NCRS will be closed on Thursday, November 25th and Friday, November 26th, 2021 for Thanksgiving. We wish you and your family a safe and happy holiday. Thank you. NCRS would like to thank the Elizabeth McGeech and McKee Foundation for their generous contribution to NCRS. Free Vision Aware Webinar. NCRS is pleased to announce the Fall Vision Aware Webinar, scheduled for October 15, 2021 from 10 to 11 a.m. This webinar will cover sight issues we face as we mature. NCRS would like to thank our event sponsor, the Orchard Group at Morgan Stanley, and our speaker sponsor, G. Suggs Insurance Agency, for making this free webinar possible. This informative webinar features Omar Mohiuddin, M-O-H-I-U-D-D-I-N, Master of Science, O-T-R/L, M-P-H. Omar Mohiuddin works at the Duke Eye Center with vision rehabilitation and performance and works with clients with age-related and acute-onset vision impairments. To register for this free webinar, please click on the hot link. After registering, you will receive a confirmation email containing information about joining the webinar. For more information, please call 919-832-5138 or email Janet at ncreadingservice.org. Comments from a New Bern listener, reading the Sun Journal, New Bern, North Carolina. I do try to catch the reading of the articles from the Sun Journal, along with the other local papers in ENC, Eastern North Carolina. Of course, I still do get the Get Fit program regularly. There are some other programs, such as Our State magazine, that I also enjoy. The NC Reading Service is truly a valuable program to us who cannot read printed materials. Please let the volunteers know that their time and reading skills mean so much to us. Barbara, a New Bern listener. It's not too late to donate your spare change. Thank you to those who have already registered with our Roundup program, and it's not too late to support NCRS by donating your monthly spare change. You can donate your spare change by rounding up every time you use your credit or debit card anywhere you shop. Once your card is registered for NCRS, any purchases you make will automatically round up to the next dollar. The change accumulates throughout the month and will automatically go directly to NCRS. There is a minimum of $10 roundup donation per month, and you can also set a maximum donation per month. For more information and to register and connect your card, please click on the hot link and click the Roundups tab. Thank you for supporting NCRS. Tech tips and reminders. All volunteers, please remember to position your microphone approximately 2 inches from your mouth for best sound quality and optimum volume level. Please remember to continue leaving the outside light on if you are the last person at NCRS. Our newspaper carriers deliver the papers around 3 a.m., and they have difficulty seeing our address when the light is off, and staff and volunteers arrive early as well. Focus on AFB Fall 2021. During the American Foundation for the Blind Centennial Year, we've been thinking a lot about what we want the world to look like 100 years from now. We want to see a world where children can dream big, where adults can pursue the careers of their choosing, and where older Americans can live safely and independently. In other words, we want a world where their inclusion knows no limits. AFB is making history. Our future builds on our foundation of inclusion. AFB remains dedicated to our work of building a world of no limits, so we're celebrating our centennial all year long. Volunteer Corner. Researcher hones her skills while sharing them with AFB. With this issue, we're launching a periodic series highlighting volunteers who assist in AFB's work. Elizabeth Bolander has been a teacher of students with visual impairments, TVI, for 4 years and loves working with her students, but she began wondering if there was more she could do for students who are blind or visually impaired. That led her to pursue her doctorate and to volunteer as part of the research team at AFB. Research Roundup, providing the data to drive advocacy and policy. People with vision loss often face steep barriers to employment, despite having the same hopes, dreams, and talents as everyone else. AFB's research projects and the experts behind them provide the data to drive advocacy and policies to create a world of no limits. Erin Preece, P-R-E-E-C-E, what does the world look like to you? Erin Preece is the editor-in-chief of Access World, AFB's monthly magazine in the intersection of technology and visual impairment. He began working with AFB as an intern while he was in high school, reviewing products for the magazine. He continued working with AFB during college, staffing the Information and Referral, I&R, line. In 2013, Erin was hired full-time to work with AFB Consulting, and 3 years later was running both the I&R line and writing and editing articles for Access World. AFB notes, AFB relies not only on corporate and individual donations, but also on the involvement of anyone who wants to support AFB's work. And as always, donations in any amount are welcome at afb.org/donate. From twoblindbrothers.com, will you shop blind? Welcome to the September 23rd through October 14th Shop Blind Challenge. It's simple. Would you buy something that you can't see? We promise you'll get something you'll love. If you don't think it's perfect, you can return it. No questions asked. Trust us. 100% of the profits are donated to Foundation Fighting Blindness to help find a cure for blindness. After October 14th, all of these items disappear. There's a $35 bundle, a $68 bundle, and a $105 bundle, and you can click under each dollar amount to add that bundle to your shopping cart. There's also a $150 level that you can add to your cart. With the surrounding moving circle in light pink saying, it's worth it, trust us. From coolblindtech.com, Cornell University develops combustible braille, C-O-M-B-U-S-T-A-B-L-E. Posted October 8th. A Cornell University-led collaboration has developed a critical component for a technology that enables inflatable braille that changes shape under the user's touch. It will be like an iPad or Kindle-like tool for the blind. For the past 30 years or more, people have been trying to pack actuators in an array really closely together. A Cornell-led collaboration created a system that uses combustion to inflate silicone membrane dots, which could someday serve as a dynamic braille display for electronics. The technology is a haptic array of densely packed actuators that induces silicone membrane dots to pop up when triggered by combustion. The study, titled Valveless Microliter Combustion for Densely Packed Arrays of Powerful Soft Actuators, was published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences on September 28, 2021. The study was led by a doctoral student, Ronald Heisser, H-E-I-S-S-E-R. What is one of the key challenges in developing a dynamic braille display? One of the key challenges in developing a dynamic braille display for electronics is figuring out a technique to apply a sufficient amount of force for each dot. Earlier works have roped in motors, hydraulics, or tethered pumps, all of which are inconvenient, complicated, and expensive. As noted by Rob Shepard, an associate professor of mechanical and aerospace engineering in the College of Engineering, and the senior author of the paper. Having something that can change its shape in a way you can feel, like real objects, doesn't exist right now. There's this trade-off between having small actuators and size and weight cost. It's so difficult. Everybody's been trying electromechanical systems. So we said, well, what if we don't do that at all and we use combustion? Small volumes of gas can create powerful outputs. How does it work? The Cornell collaboration included technicians from the Israel Institute of Technology to develop a system mainly comprising molded silicone and microfluidic liquid metal traces, where liquid metal electrodes spark to ignite a microscale volume of premixed methane and oxygen. Regarding their array design, the fuel flows through a series of independent channels in which each channel leads to a 3 millimeter wide actuator. A thin silicone membrane is forced to inflate several millimeters by the rapid combustion at each region. A magnetic latching system provides a persistent form to these dots, and the entire system can be reset by simply pressing them down. With no requirement for electromagnetic valves, the actuators can be packed densely, leading to a smaller, potentially portable system, with the potential to make large displacements at high force within 1 millisecond. The commercial version can be safely operated due to the quick cooling capability of the fluidic elastomer actuators and the consumption of minimal fuel. Are there other applications for this technology? The technology is also stretchable and comfortable, and the researchers expect integration into a series of applications like soft robots and wearable reality devices that simulate artificial touch. The biocompatible components also find application in surgical tools that manipulate tissues or open block passageways in medical patients. The existing system comprises 9 fluidic elastomers, but the researchers believe they can scale up and make a completely electronic tactile display. The study was funded by the National Science Foundation, the Air Force Office of Scientific Research, and the Sloan Foundation. Most of the components were fabricated by the team at the Laboratory of Atomic and Solid State Physics, LASSP, Professional Machine Shop. From Healthline.com, benefits of eye injections for diabetes. Diabetes can lead to vision complications such as diabetic retinopathy and diabetic macular edema. Anti-VEGF injections can help protect your vision and may even improve your sight. The procedures are considered safe and generally don't cause pain. Eye injections are one of the most common treatments for people who have vision complications related to diabetes, such as diabetic macular edema, DME, and advanced cases of diabetic retinopathy. Both conditions can lead to vision loss and blindness if left unmanaged. Getting a needle in the eye may not sound too appealing, but it can help protect your vision and prevent the condition from worsening. Fortunately, the procedure is quick and not too painful. If your doctor has recommended eye injections for diabetes complications to your vision, it can be helpful to learn more about the treatment and the types of injections offered. Read on to find out the benefits of eye injections and what to expect from the treatment. Eye injections for diabetes. Many doctors use eye injections to treat vision complications in people with diabetes. Some vision complications can result from having high blood levels of sugar for a long time. Eventually, those high blood sugars can cause damage to the small blood vessels in the eye. Those vessels may start leaking blood and other fluids into a part of the eye called the retina, resulting in a complication called diabetic retinopathy. About half of people who have diabetic retinopathy eventually get DME, according to the National Eye Institute trusted source. This condition occurs when the retina can no longer absorb the excess fluid from leaky blood vessels. As a result, part of the retina called the macula thickens and swells. In diabetic eye disease, a protein known as vascular endothelial growth factor, VEGF, can become overactive. This causes new, abnormal blood vessels to grow, which in turn leads to more leakage. Some eye injections for diabetes contain medicines that block VEGF and reduce swelling in the macula. This can help slow the progression of DME and offers slight vision improvements in some people. What types of injections are there? There are 2 types of eye injections for diabetes, anti-VEGF drugs and corticosteroids. Anti-VEGF drugs. Injections of anti-VEGF medications block the protein that can stimulate the growth of abnormal blood vessels. This helps prevent excess fluid from leaking into the retina and potentially improves your eyesight. Anti-VEGF medicines include aflibercept, Eylea, bevacizumab, Avastin, ranibizumab, Lucentis. Most people with DME need several anti-VEGF injections over the course of a few months at first. Over time, you may be able to get them less frequently or potentially stop treatment, depending on your condition and symptoms. However, some people will need to keep getting anti-VEGF injections throughout their lives to protect their vision. Corticosteroids. Corticosteroids are another medication used in eye injections for diabetes. These drugs reduce swelling in the macula, which can help give you clearer vision. Like anti-VEGF drugs, corticosteroids may be injected directly into the eye. They can also be given in the form of pills, eye drops, an implant that can release small doses of the medication over a period of time. Understanding the injection process. While eye injections for diabetes might sound intimidating, the process may not be as uncomfortable as you think, especially when you realize the needle part is over in a matter of seconds. An eye care professional usually performs the procedure in the office, so there's no hospital stay or general anesthesia needed. Still, it's best to arrange for someone to drive you home, as your vision can be blurry after the injection. Here's what to expect. A healthcare professional cleans the skin around your eyes, usually with an antibacterial solution of povidone iodine. They then attach small clips called eye speculums to your eyes in order to keep them open during the injection. Next, they numb your eyes using an anesthetic drop or gel. In some cases, your doctor might use a small needle near the eye to administer the anesthetic. A very thin, short needle is inserted into the eye to dispense the medication. You shouldn't feel pain, but you might feel slight pressure. This part only takes a few seconds. The eye clips are removed. Your eye and surrounding area are cleaned. The whole process should take between 15 and 30 minutes. You may have a little eye irritation for a few hours afterward. Some people notice a tiny spot of blood at the injection site. Your doctor may prescribe antibiotic eye drops to prevent infection. Your vision may not improve right away, but you'll probably be able to resume your usual activities quickly. Be sure to return to the doctor's office for your follow-up appointments. If you feel concerned about eye injections for diabetes, talk with your doctor. They can offer information and tips to help put you at ease. You can also practice relaxation techniques, like deep breathing, to help stay calm before the procedure. Side effects. Anti-VEGF injections are considered to be safe, effective treatment for DME. However, you may experience some temporary side effects, such as irritation or discomfort, watery, dry, or itchy eyes, floaters, feeling like there's something in your eye, inflammation, infection, pain, increased pressure in the eye. Serious complications from anti-VEGF injections are rare, but can include vitreous hemorrhage, bleeding into the back of the eye, retinal detachment when the retina is pulled away from the back of the eye. Let your doctor know if you've had or are at high risk of blood clots, heart attack, or stroke. These conditions can increase the risk of serious side effects. Like anti-VEGF injections, corticosteroid injections are considered safe. Side effects are generally mild and may include floaters, eye pain, or eye pressure. Keep in mind that corticosteroids may increase the risk of developing glaucoma or cataracts. Talk with your doctor to see if the potential benefits outweigh the risks. Outlook. Many people respond well to anti-VEGF injections. A report from 2019 Trusted Source suggested that the treatment has helped save vision for millions of people who have retinal diseases. A 2018 review of 24 studies found that anti-VEGF drugs helped prevent vision loss and improved eyesight for people with DME. The research also showed that people treated with aflibercept tended to have slightly better results after a year than those treated with ranibizumab and bevacizumab. Managing your diabetes can also help improve your outlook if you have DME. Tips for managing your diabetes include taking medications as prescribed, testing your blood sugar regularly, exercising 30 minutes a day, having a nutritious diet, and quitting smoking if you smoke. Takeaway: DME and other complications from diabetes can lead to blindness. Fortunately, treatments like anti-VEGF injections can help prevent vision loss and may even protect your eyesight. As scary as it might sound, the procedure is usually quick, painless, and safe for most people. Talk with your doctor to learn more about the potential risks and benefits of eye injections for diabetes to see if this treatment is right for you. Another cool blind tech post from October 8th. PlayStation Store launches Accessibility Collection. The PlayStation Store has introduced a new collection that is specifically focused on games that are known for accessibility. The PlayStation Store has collections to help users browse a specific category of games. And announced by Mark Friend, PlayStation's lead user researcher and accessibility lead, there is now one for accessibility. This collection can be accessed on the PlayStation Store website online, or it can be accessed from the PlayStation console itself. Currently, the collection has 45 items listed, including titles such as Ratchet & Clank, Rift Apart, Moving Out, Jedi, Fallen Order, Fall Guys, Celeste, and more. These titles include the usual sorting methods for sorting by release date, price, most downloaded, and others. While the games listed don't detail any accessibility features through the store page, users will be able to use this collection to do further research online and find out more information about the featured games. Xbox recently announced a change to its store where it will be introducing accessibility tags to games on the store. This allows users to have a deeper understanding of the games they may be interested in purchasing, but hold off on due to be unsure of if the game is suitable for their needs. This includes the game being featured in an accessibility section of the Microsoft Store, but will also detail what features are in the game. It's not clear if Sony PlayStation looks to be introducing further support by highlighting what features are available and why the featured games are chosen, but it would be great to see a similar system to the Xbox accessibility feature tags being implemented. From interestingengineering.com, the European Union proposes mandatory USB-C on all devices. What does it mean for your iPhone? Article by Ameya, A-M-E-Y-A, Paleja, P-A-L-E-J-A. In the year 2009, electronic giants Samsung, Nokia, and Huawei, H-U-A-W-E-I, came together and agreed to use a standard charger across their devices. Present at the occasion was a relatively new phone manufacturer as a signatory, Apple. However, the company didn't go along with the agreement when it debuted its new phones with different charging ports. So far, things seemed unlikely to change until a new law would come into effect and force Apple to adopt the USB-C charger. And this EU law could be it. After years of waiting for the industry to agree on a single solution to charge electronic devices, the European Commission has finally put its foot down and mandated that the USB-C port will be the standard in the future. The proposal, which still needs an EU Parliament pass, is not just limited to phones, but also extends to a range of electronic devices, such as tablets, headphones, portable speakers, video game consoles, and cameras. The voluntary signing in 2009 did bring down the number of chargers from 30 to 3. But with 420 million portable electronic devices sold in the EU every year, the problem remains unsolved. According to a commission report, an average consumer in the EU now owns 3 mobile chargers. Yet 38% of users faced issues because the chargers are not interoperable, and more than 2.4 billion euros are spent annually on standalone chargers, with 11,000 tons of waste generated from the disposal of unused chargers. To address this, the Commission has revised the Radio Equipment Directive mandating the USB-C to be the common port and unbundling the charger from the sale of a device. It also requires manufacturers to provide details of charging performance for their devices and harmonizing fast charging technology that will allow consumers to use a single cable to charge all their electronic devices. The BBC cites a 2018 report to state that 50% of chargers sold in the EU had micro USB ports, 29% had a USB-C connector, and 21% had the Lightning connector used only by Apple. While most new Android-run phones are already being shipped with the USB-C connector, the proposal will directly affect Apple, which recently announced the iPhone 13 with the Lightning connector. In a statement, the Cupertino-based company said that strict regulation stifles innovation rather than encouraging it, and the move will harm consumers in Europe and around the world. According to the BBC, the company already has plans to place its devices and their usage carbon neutral by 2030, and has argued that this move will force Apple users to discard the cables that they currently use, leading to more electronic waste. On its part, Apple is already working on reducing electronic waste by removing earphones and charging connectors from its boxes, the company claims. But the recent move has been in the works for a while now and is not a complete surprise for Apple. The company has been preparing for this outcome since its iPads and MacBooks are currently supplied with USB-C ports, which Apple calls Thunderbolt. So the only device left out is the iPhone. The EU proposal will come into effect only 24 months after it is approved by the Parliament. This should give Apple enough time to modify its iPhone. However, the mandate implicitly has space for innovation and adding a highly awaited, new feature to smartphones, wireless charging. If Apple chooses not to take the USB-C route just to defy the EU Commission, we would be happy to see them innovate there. I'm going to run out of time reading the definition of long COVID article from CNBC.com. So just to let you know, you can find that on their website. Article by Sam Meredith, M-E-R-E-D-I-T-H. Dateline London, the World Health Organization on Wednesday published a definition of long COVID for the first time, seeking to provide much-needed clarity on one of the most mysterious aspects of the coronavirus pandemic. Here's how the UN Health Agency has defined long COVID, referring to it as post-COVID-19 condition, the name proposed by WHO's International Classification of Diseases. Post-COVID-19 condition occurs in individuals with a history of probable or confirmed SARS-CoV-2 infection, usually 3 months from the onset of COVID-19, with symptoms that last for at least 2 months and cannot be explained by an alternative diagnosis, the WHO said. Common symptoms include fatigue, shortness of breath, cognitive dysfunction, but also others, which generally have an impact on everyday functioning. Symptoms may be new onset, following initial recovery from an acute COVID-19 episode, or persist from the initial illness. Symptoms may also fluctuate or relapse over time. The WHO said a separate definition may be applicable for children. The Global Health Agency has previously said it has taken a long time to resolve a formal definition of long COVID because there are so many linked symptoms associated with the condition. Within the role of the WHO, this has been a major issue for us, Dr. Mike Ryan, Executive Director of the WHO's Health Emergencies Program, said on Wednesday. We have to remain vigilant. This pandemic is not over, and it continues to cause disease, continues to cause death, but it also continues to cause long-term consequences for people around the world, Ryan said. Again, within the falling numbers that we see, that masks tremendous problems emerging in countries. Ryan described the definition of long COVID as a great step forward, before adding the WHO's understanding of the condition was evolving and therefore likely to change. A modern medical challenge of the first order. Most people who get COVID-19 suffer the common symptoms of a persistent cough, fever, and shortness of breath, and recover within a few days or weeks. However, for some, the symptoms can last much longer. The WHO estimated that 10% to 20% of COVID-19 patients experience lingering symptoms for months following infection. These prolonged symptoms can include persistent fatigue and breathlessness, brain fog, and depression. Health experts say the condition is clearly of public health concern, given the substantial impact it has on society. Well, I've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Please be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.